You're listening to Scratch Take, a podcast where songwriters tell the story behind their craft. I'm Jeremy Katzenstein. Hamesha is a multilingual Indian experimental rock project fronted by Zain Alam. In this episode, Zain talks about the diverse influences, the cultural dissonance, and the resulting reconciliation that gave birth to Hamesha.
My name is Zain Alam, and I am recording music under the name Hamesha, with now that it's become a band since last October, with the addition of Dylan Bostic, who plays guitar and is the producer, Adrian DeFontaine, who plays bass, and John Snyder, who plays drums. A good song is anything that is memorable in my mind. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a really sing-along, catchy melody. It doesn't have to be like a bubblegum chorus that gets stuck in your head. I'm even thinking of certain types of, UK club music I listen to that just has like a rhythm in it that is just so infectious that I just can never forget. So I'm a pretty big fan of the UK collective Night Slugs. Yeah, so it's producers and DJs who they actually work a lot with Killella now, who is kind of like their, the artist, the vocalist that they've united behind. But that's an example of music that is like very, very different from what I'm trying to do, but I am like equally enthralled by, which is just like, it's extremely rhythmic, but the rhythms are so interesting and unique and often just drill their way into my head where I'm just like tapping those rhythms, over and over again. So I don't think there was ever like a conscious effort to make any of these songs like catchy. It shocks me still to this day when people are just like, oh, you know that song where you do the this, that thing, and they hum it, and I'm just like, that's incredible that's a melody that you find hummable or memorable, because to me this is still just a weird project hatched in northern India that I'm surprised often has resonance with as many people as it does. I actually would say, so your brother Jason was humming one of the songs to me the other day, which is called Lucknow to Karachi. It's abbreviated with the airport codes, LKO to KHI. And he was just saying, I really, really love the chorus melody where you just do the na 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 thing. And it's just three notes that I sing in the chorus. But he was just like, there's something like so like sad and simple and beautiful about that melody. But I would say in my music it's probably less something like the rhythms and more the quality of the melodies themselves. So I began writing songs at I wouldn't know the exact date, but beginnings of songs, formation of songs. I would say formally at some point in college, but I would say if you wanted to get really, really formal, as in songs that had a name, had a very definite structure, were something that I could remember as having like a part one, a part two, a chorus or a verse. That happened when I left college, and immediately after graduating, I went to India for a year to do a research fellowship with the 1947 Partition Archive. It was a Clinton Fellowship awarded by the American India Foundation. And in that time, I spent a year collecting the eyewitness accounts of people who had survived the 1947 partition. And in that time, especially in the first 3-4 months of my fellowship, I was living in Lucknow, India, which is the my place of ancestral origins. And over there, I was, you know, I was having an incredible time learning again about the culture, learning about where my grandparents grew up, just getting to know the place and getting really into the work. And then, you know, once that romance, initial hot romance period ends with the place, like, you know, a month or two in, you start to realize, oh my God, this, I'm in a really different place. This place is really foreign. Even though I look like everyone and I can speak the same language as everyone, I feel like fundamentally at odds with a lot of the stuff that's going on here. This really old, conservative, Muslim heritage place in India that I feel really alone in. And so in that alone time, I decided, let's go back to my recursive loop of me, guitar, and, you know, recordings on my computer. And so I bought the cheapest guitar I could find in, like, the one music store they had in the whole city. And luckily, I had bought one of these little Apogee microphones that's like, a, you know, a USB audio interface that's really easy to take around. Very fortunate that I bought that, because I don't know how easy it would have been for me to get over there. But from that began to emerge a much more cohesive process of not only guitar loops that I was recording, but also sounds that I was collecting as an oral historian with the archive. So not just sounds of people's stories, but sounds of the street, sounds of the train, sounds in different environments. And then in addition to that, you know, I was hearing all these sounds that reminded me of my childhood, like old 90s Bollywood soundtracks or old folk music that my parents used to listen to. And there was like a juncture of childhood memories and then of actually being in the place where these sounds and this part of culture emerged. And then my own training as a somebody who plays guitar and likes rock music came together. I think the very first song that was like a song that you could recognize as a song and not just a set of loops and recordings was the song that you now know as Burma Between You and Me, which is the one that we released as the debut single and the music video. And I have a very distinct memory of when that song came together and I realized that, like, oh, this is an aesthetic that I feel like I have been trying to articulate for a very, very long time and have never actually heard it until now. And that was, it is based off of a loop of a qawwali, which is a traditional Sufi Muslim, I guess not exclusively Muslim, but has its origins in Muslim culture, North Indian form of music that I grew up hearing a lot. My dad was a very big fan. And the loop is just of like a harmonium and a tabla, and it's playing this very, very interesting short melody that when I looped, I was completely hypnotized by it, and it was just like, God, there's so much in this few bars of sound that you could just listen to over and over and over again. Anybody who listens to the debut album, as I'm sure you've probably noticed, has seen that loops are a very big part of the music. And from all kinds of music that I like, whether it's you know, certain kinds of rock music like shoegaze or krautrock or things post-punk, things like that that we all really like, or even on the other side, things like hip-hop, loops are a fundamental part of like a lot of the music that I love. And Seeing a continuity between loops as they were using that music and then the way that looping is done in, say, qawwali music or traditional Indian music, where in qawwali often, I don't know how much they do it as anymore, but in the old days, in the original days, they would be singing certain passages and verses from the songs over and over and over again in order to, you know, reach the state of like you know, hypnotized, transcendence, feeling very in the groove, trying to get to something divine. And so this, back to the song, this very, very short loop that I found, which I found really, really beautiful and very much hitting the point of what this music was supposed to do. I just had it on loop for a very, very long time, just listening to it over and over again. Then I just began playing some melodies, some arpeggiated little guitar lines over it, some chords from, you know, culled from my favorite, what you would consider, I guess, more Western indie rock music, over the loop. And after a while of kind of like tossing and turning over the loop, when I hit these three chords that you hear throughout the song over that loop, everything just clicked in my brain, and I was just like, oh, that's it. That's exactly the sound I'm trying to go for. And so those three guitar chords over the Qawwali loop became the backbone of the song. And then over that, I would just, you know, kind of scat vocal melodies that in the end turned out to sound almost more like Bollywood melodies than something that you'd hear in a rock song. And, you know, once you had that structure, and I just kind of began to fill it in with things and stretch and compress and eventually have it down to a structure, when that song was done, I finally realized, oh, okay, this is no longer something where I'm just kind of, you know, having a good time throwing stuff together, but there's actually, like, I think a sound that I've maybe found and am really, really insistent on exploring now. And so then I just kept going, and then it ended up becoming 14 songs, the 14 songs that you hear on the album. I'm very much not the person who was like, who jams a lot or is like trying to solo or anything, because I wouldn't consider myself like an extremely technically talented musician by any means. So I guess it's in that respect, it's more just the like, yeah, let me try and think about what I'm doing aesthetically here and put my efforts there. Actually, it's interesting that you bring that up about the loops, because now that I'm back thinking about it, so when I told you about Burn But Between You and Me being the first song that I made, that is the first song that formally was like realized as a song and its structure and its form. But the unending loop in the very last song on the album, Slow Dance Karachi, it's like the very low-pitched, haunting kind of guitar that you just hear just playing kind of the same notes over and over again. I would actually say that might be the oldest recording that found its way onto the album. I actually remember recording that guitar line with my iPhone as a junior in my dorm room at Eclectic. And I'm not sure why it like resonated with me at that moment, but I had just bought a delay pedal that had like a 5-second loop function on it. And I was just having a great time with it, playing around with it and making great sounds. And the thing that's really cool about the guitar that I play, the Jazzmaster, is, and the reason why it's so prevalent in like a lot of shoegaze, post-punk, indie rock, is the way that its strings resonate, especially when you play like one note and then you play that same note against an open string. Like the slight differences in the two sounds, it has like a very like beautiful, unique sound. So I was like playing around with that and playing around with that with the delay pedal and looping it, and I hit these three notes, looped it, and I was just like, oh, that sounds really pretty, and began playing like another line over it, overlaid another line over it, and then you had just like three, then you had something that was like a drone, and then you had like two very washed out chords in the back, and then these three notes, two of which are the same, playing over each other. And then that was like original loop that was just me that I then just began riffing on. And as soon as I began riffing on it, I was like, I have to record this somewhere. At that time, I wasn't good enough with anything like Ableton or Logic to record with my computer. So I was just recording everything with my iPhone. But I'm really happy that iPhone recording has made its way through all my iPhones since, because it was actually in India that I like heard that iPhone recording again, and I was just like, oh man, this is like a really beautiful drone, and I really want to do something with it. And then I overlaid it with the sounds of Karachi, where you hear all the motorcycles passing and like the guy, you know, shouting like a political slogan and like some other sounds that you hear. And that juxtaposition was just like, okay, this is where the song is supposed to go. Oftentimes, most of the time actually, simpler is better. And I think that's something that you get to realize in the beginning, because I think you're trying to compensate for so much of a feeling that like, I don't know if I'm doing this right. I don't know if I know what I'm doing. Let me just throw everything in the pot and make sure I've thrown everything in there and then try and figure this out. And having songs that are cramped and packed and full is not always the same as songs that are interesting, complex, not just for being complex, it's complexity's sake. Space is really important, and I think that was some of the best advice I either read somewhere or heard from someone. But it's basically a riff on, you know, when you're writing Kill Your Darlings. And that's something sometimes that can only happen when you've achieved a certain distance from the song. And luckily for me, when I was writing the songs, they were like all written in India. And then like when I came back to the US, it was like I was at home for a couple months, and then I came to New York, and then I still had like some time. And then in addition to all that time, I also had the physical change of like, I'm no longer in India, I'm back in the US. And so when I brought my best friend Dylan in, and he started producing the record and mixing it, and we started re-recording all the instruments. I was really, really happy that he was able to be like, I think we should maybe cut this out. Maybe we should double, triple this. How do you feel about these things? He was always very respectful about the process and respectful of like what I had already done. But I was also happy that I was in a place where I wasn't just like, oh no, don't kill that riff, because I it's connected to a memory, it's connected to a thing, and like you really can't get rid of it. And it was like, no, for the most part, those are specific things, and the overall aim should always be, you know, the overall song. And sometimes it requires a lot more chopping and editing that you'd like, but having that distance and often having a second voice there is really, really helpful in helping you realize that.
Thanks so much to Zain Alam for coming on to Scratch Take. Visit scratchtake.com for a link to Hamesha's Bandcamp page, where you'll find a link to the group's self-titled debut album. You'll also find a complete playlist of all of the songs featured in today's episode. And finally, if you like the show, make sure to subscribe on iTunes for more deep dives into the minds of songwriters.